Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 20th of June. 40 years ago, we walked on the moon, which is still hard to believe. Just want to let you know the second hour of the program today, we are going to commemorate that event, and we have the author of a marvelous book, Rocket Men, The Epic Story of the First Men on the Moon. Craig Nelson will be joining us. This hour, it's all things political, which it always is, Monday at 9. We have a lot to talk about today. We're going to be looking at the president's schedule this week. It's going to be all Obama all the time. He is really stepping up now with skepticism and criticism of his health care reform effort mounting on Capitol Hill, and there are some Democrats who are concerned about it. The White House has launched a new phase of its strategy, according to the Washington Post, designed to dramatically increase public pressure on Congress. All Obama, all the time. Healthcare reform is some of what we'll be talking about with our guest, and we'll look at other issues as well. We do want to note, I am so sad about this, the passing of Walter Cronkite, who gave me my news growing up during the 60s, and I always thought he was just wonderful. And it's been hard to know that he's gone. So we're going to do a special on Wednesday at 10 o'clock for those of you who feel as I do, and he covered so much in history and did it so well with such grace and knowledge and enthusiasm when it came to things like the space run. So we'll talk about his life Wednesday at 10. We also want to note the passing of Frank McCourt, and I know many of you readers that you are were big fans of his work. So two big losses over the weekend. This hour of the program, all things political, and Julie Mason is our guest this hour. Julie joins us from time to time. She is the White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner. She also has written for the Houston Chronicle. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Julie, as we always do, and our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Feel free to send an email. You can do that as well, and the email is talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org for you to join our conversation. And we welcome Julie right now.
Good morning. Hello. Kathleen.
Hi, Julie. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm okay. I so miss Walter Cronkite, though. I have to talk to you about him because I assume that you would have been a fan, too.
Yeah.
I think I'm older than you, but boy, he carried me through the Kennedy assassination and Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy and the war and Watergate. And was such, I've missed him, Julie, ever since he went off the air. I'm not kidding you. I always wanted my news to be delivered by Walter Cronkite. I always did. He was the best.
He was. And, you know, I never met him, but the people around here in Washington who knew him talk about what a terrific guy he was, like just what a great friend and mentor. And, you know, because a lot of these guys, we see him on TV and then you sort of hear secretly, privately, that they're not always that nice.
Right.
But he was definitely one of the good ones.
Yeah. It's worth watching whatever documentaries. The CBS one last night was very good.
Oh, yeah. That was terrific.
Because it's good for young people, too, who don't remember that era in American history. It was so tumultuous and he did it so well, and particularly with today's moon landing 40 years ago, he was so enthusiastic about that program. I kept saying, Walter, go, take the trip. Go to the moon, go somewhere.
Broadcast live from the moon. Do it.
Yeah, do it. He would have been the best. At any rate, we want to notice his passing, and we are going to do a special show on him on Wednesday. So what do you think? All Obama all the time this week, Julie?
Oh, man. Does it work?
I don't know.
We're going to see him every single day with his new aggressive attitude and rhetoric. But I don't know if that's going to – the problem is right now he's trying to move public opinion, but I don't know if that moves Congress.
Oh, that's interesting. Do you think that public opinion is already with him on this? Aren't they?
Not really.
No?
There was some devastating polling in the Washington Post this morning that showed real drops in support, especially for health care. People want to slow it down. They're not sure. They're split. They like it, but they're worried about the deficit. They're worried about all this federal spending. So real questions being raised. He's lost a lot of support just in the past month.
So who's been able to garner support on the other side?
Well, that's the thing. You don't see Republicans gaining much traction.
No.
They don't really have an alternate plan. They're saying they want reform, but they don't want Obama reform. But I think what they have been able to successfully do is raise a lot of alarms about federal spending and what it will mean for people and whether or not this health care reform is going to be good. It will be significant, but is it really what people want? And so they've raised doubts, but they haven't come up with an alternative.
Mm-hmm. Are the figures changed? The last figures I saw when it came to support for some kind of public plan, the public really wanted that kind of plan. Have those statistics changed, Julie?
No, not significantly. The public plan among people who want reform, the majority still want a public plan, but the percentage of people who want health care reform has gone down. So overall, it's gone down. But among people who want health care reform, there is strong support for a public option.
Mm-hmm. Is the timetable, Olympia Snow has said she thinks that the timetable, we shouldn't be bound by a timetable that isn't realistic.
Right.
Others have said if he doesn't do this his first year, it's just not going to get done.
Right. Well, that's the thing. You know, presidents like to do their big ticket items early on while they're still popular and they still have that political capital and momentum. And he is worried that the longer this goes on, the less likely it is to pass, or to pass in a form that he can really support and get behind. So there's a lot of concern about that. At the same time, there's now a growing sense that he's rushing them. And when you look back at how he got the stimulus through, he really got it through in a big rush. You know, he signed it in February, that $787 billion spending package. And now there's all kinds of questions about the effectiveness of the stimulus program. Now, I would argue that it's a little early, although it has not shown the results that the White House promised, but, you know, maybe it will show results in 6 months. But using the stimulus example, members of Congress are saying, well, look, your stimulus program, we rushed that through and it didn't work out, like you said, so we're not going to be rushed on health care.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the unemployment rate, a lot of states with over 10% mm-hmm. unemployment now, that's terrible.
It is terrible, and it's in a lot of states that are politically important to Obama, and that's why we see him making lots of trips to Ohio and places like the Midwest and talking up stimulus and health care reform and really giving them a lot of attention and a lot of sort of political stroking, trying to keep them in his column. He doesn't want to lose them.
Mm-hmm. Has he waited too long to really do this all-out assault or not?
Well, the White House decided early on to hang back on health care and not make the mistake of the Clinton administration and dictate from on high what health care reform would look like. And they really felt like if members of Congress were allowed to craft it and shape it, then they would be stakeholders and they would have buy-in and an incentive to pass it, a political incentive to pass it. But that hasn't really turned out to be quite the case. It hasn't turned out that way. And so now, as you say, at this somewhat late hour, he's had to get much more aggressive in order to sort of whip up support for it. I just don't know how effective it's going to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, he certainly has been all over the place. He does these remarkable speeches at various places. The speech before the NAACP on Friday, I think, mm-hmm. was another winner.
He's back in campaign mode. He really is. He is fired up. But again, we're not in a campaign. You know, so these tactics, it'll be interesting to see because people have gone back to their lives. You know, the White House is trying to tap old methods like house parties and rallies and things like that, things that work during the campaign to drum up support for what they're trying to do. But, you know, people are worried and they're back at work and we're not in a campaign. And so trying to whip up public opinion may not work because members of Congress, they're looking at these polls and the dropping numbers and they're just kind of getting stuck.
Right. Let's go back to the stimulus for a moment mm-hmm. before we return to health care. Do you think that he, to be given credit, should be given a year for the stimulus package to work, or was the stimulus package not enough?
Well, he's asking for 2 years for the stimulus package to work, which is interesting because when they were pushing for it, they made all kinds of promises and pledges. You know, this will have an instant impact, and this will, you know, shovel-ready projects and everything like that. And now they're saying, well, it's really a 2-year program, and we need 2 years to make it work. So I think that's got a lot of attention too, and it's got a lot of backs up around town from people who said, hey, you know, we passed this because you said it would work right away, and it's not working right away.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, Julie, will get some kind of health bill before October, before the end of September?
You know, I never do well trying to second guess what Congress will do. They work according to their own schedule.
Right.
You know, they're already sort of looking ahead to their August recess, and everyone wants to put this off. You know, Obama has moved the goalposts on that, too, and he said, by the end of the year, we'll have something. We definitely, we want it by August. We'll have it by the end of the year. Oh, I don't like to say. I mean, here in Washington, we do get bogged down in the day-to-day and the scorekeeping. And so from where I sit, I would say no. But then, you know, Congress also has a great ability to sort of rally and do something really quick and crazy at the last minute. So that could happen, too.
What is Senator Kennedy doing behind the scenes to help move this along?
Really talking to a lot of people. He's really invested in this, and he's using a lot of his personal capital and political capital to really see that something gets done. He's not well at all, and so he's been making a lot of calls, and you know, Obama invokes his name a lot. Mm-hmm. And is using that sort of as a sentimental wedge, if you will, a political wedge to again rally support and say that do this for Senator Kennedy. You know.
And would it be farther along if he could be in the Senate if he were not terribly
ill? Yes, I mean, he's a great one for bringing the sides together and sitting down. You saw what he did on No Child Left Behind for President Bush, which was one of President Bush's first big initiatives. Kennedy was the one who really helped him get that done in a bipartisan way. And so Kennedy would really be someone who could help Obama with that. And you see Obama trying to do outreach, but he really hasn't been able to bring Republicans in on this at all.
Mm-hmm. Is there something, the Post, referencing this article from the Post, they're talking about cable news programs using the phrase the president's health care program is teetering, it is embattled, despite a week in which he did have proposals endorsed by the doctor and nurses associations and committees in both legislative chambers passing major bills.
Right. And that's true. And that is absolutely the White House line on it. But at the same time, we're talking about five conflicting bills, which is a very chaotic situation in Congress. And those bills will all have to be reconciled. So, there's five bills, but is that progress, or is that sort of more diffusion of the issue? Is that an effective form of progress? Also, he has all these deals in hand from, you know, hospitals and healthcare providers who say they're going to help him. But they really, and the White House announced these deals with great fanfare. But there's nothing set in stone, and they're very amorphous. And again, it has a very sort of campaign feel to it. It's nothing concrete. Mm-hmm. It's nothing solid. It's just it's a lot of hype. Mm-hmm. And so we certainly have a war of messages here.
Right. So somebody needs to frame the issue.
Yes, they really need to get down to one plan and then start working off one plan. But now, like with these five different ones, trying to work them out, you know, and everyone's coming at it from a different direction, and we still don't know how they're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
So that's a big outstanding issue.
We have a ton of phone calls. We'll take in a moment just a question. Are we going to the moon again?
I hope so. I feel ready to go now. Problem is, God, it's so expensive. And, man, this government has no money.
That's right. They don't have any money.
They're broke.
So Mars is out of the question for now.
Short term, yeah. But, again, that's something that gets people fired up. You know, people love it, so they may find a way to do it.
Right. It distracts us, doesn't
it?
All right.
It does.
Let's take a phone call. Jim from Milwaukee, our first caller. Hi, Jim.
Yeah, hi. The cost, people should keep in mind, of course, that the cost of needless wars are one of the reasons that we have problems selling the health care program, because they've stolen so much money for other things. And I'll just cite some sources that people can look into on this. For example, look under Goering, Nuremberg, and in the Nuremberg trials under Snopes.com subtitle, all you have to do is tell the people that they're attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to greater danger. This is followed by whatreallyhappened.com. H.L. Mencken is quoted, "The whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and hence clamorous to be led to safety by menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary." So you yoke people up to war and waste the money that could be used on other things. And this whatreallyhappened.com is a wonderful website because it also talks about how... Bin Laden is a nemesis wheeled out of his casket to help Bush, again, to yoke people up on the threat to war.
Who does this website, Jim?
It's whatreallyhappened.com.
Right.
And the final point I'd make about that, and then I'll leave it for other people, is that on this website it also points out that, for example, that now with new technology it's possible to manipulate voices so that you can take the voice of someone who is deceased and create a situation where he's saying words that he never said in the first place. And you can do the same thing with the picture portion of the presentation. And this is all on this website, and it's just fascinating because it tells us how they use the threat of false enemies to manipulate us.
Well, I'll definitely be going to the website today. I'm not familiar with it. Julie?
Well, it's interesting. The cost of the wars has been a big problem. The government recently released new deficit figures and attributed the record high deficit to war costs. So that's a big problem. Just talking about that, it made me think of something, and that is the government is thinking of doing away with the color-coded warning system.
Oh, yeah.
When we were talking about that Mencken quote and keeping people afraid and keeping people worried. And, you know, I always thought that color-coded system was, you know, just garbage. And so I think the Obama administration thinks so, too, and they're just going to dump it.
Yeah, I was noticing how often I was picking somebody up at the airport last week, Julie, and they kept saying it must have been every 10 minutes. The color is orange. Mm-hmm. The color is orange. And I thought, why is the color orange?
I don't remember what that means anymore.
I know.
Oh, it's orange. Wait, is yellow worse or better?
Right.
Don't we want to be green or blue? Red is bad. I know that.
Red is bad. And I knew orange probably wasn't very good, but I didn't know why. So that may be gone.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Gone. Yeah. Right. They're gonna study it.
They're going to study it. Along with everything else. Thanks, Jim, for the call. Dave is next from Menominee, Michigan. Hi, Dave.
Hi, good morning.
Hi. Thanks.
Well, you know, I wanted to talk about the poll numbers, how they're moving, and how Republicans are able to achieve that by misinforming people and telling half-truths to try to confuse people. Like, you know, saying phrases like, you know, we don't want to raise taxes on the American people, and it's always the American people, but really who they're talking about is very wealthy people that are going to have their taxes raised on.
Another thing they're saying is that Obamacare will come between you and your doctor. And that's not proven. I mean, no one's trying to do that, come between you and your doctor, but that's a scare that they're using. So definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Both sides do it, though.
Who's between us now
I got to tell you.
You know, the insurance companies who are between us right now. But, you know, I wanted to talk about the misinformation, and even the guest we have this morning said it would work right away with the stimulus package. We were told it would work right away. We were never told that. We were told this was going to be long and hard, and this is, you know, it's going to be up and down, but it's going to take a long time. So even quotes like that misinform people.
Well, actually, he did, and they said that if Congress passed the stimulus right away, that unemployment would stay at 8%.
Right.
And now we're on our way to 10%. So they made a lot of promises that haven't come true.
Right.
And they say that there were shovel-ready projects just waiting, and then it turns out that it's a little harder than that to get the money out.
He also talked about judging him, what his success would be, and he specifically talked about the number of jobs that would either be saved, considering how many were lost last year, or the number of new jobs created. Judge me on that, he
mm-hmm.
said. And that doesn't look likely to happen.
Right. Right. That's been a little slow. You know, and economists do say that employment is a lagging indicator. But my point about the Obama administration is they set the bar very high for themselves and very ambitious, and they've come up short of that. And now, instead of saying, you know, you're right, our numbers were bad, there's just a lot of excuses.
Mm-hmm. Dave, anything else?
Well, you know, we're 4.5 months into this, since it's been passed. I just can't believe that somebody would say, you know, hey, you know, how come it's not better now?
Right. No, I totally agree with you, Dave. I don't think it's been given enough time to work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and there's only 30% of the money has been spent.
Mm-hmm.
This money has hardly been spent yet. You should bring these facts up. There's a lot of money to still roll out to keep the ball, you know, in motion.
Right.
You know, we have to, if you're going to say, you know, things haven't happened, you have to maybe point out, you know, a lot of the money still hasn't gotten into the system yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm.
let's,
for sure.
Let's roll out the money. Why
yeah.
Why don't we do that? Julie, why don't we roll out the money?
Oh, are you asking me?
Yes.
Getting government to spend money, I mean, you'd think it would be easy, but they do have these processes, and it does get bogged down, especially once the money starts filtering down to states and cities. They can't just give it out. You know, they have bidding processes and things like that. It just slows down.
Thanks, Dave, for your call. A couple lines are open for you now for all things political. The number 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@WPR.org. talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today. Today, of course, is the 40th anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing on the moon. And we're going to be talking about that with the author of the definitive book. This guy went through 23,000 pages of NASA material and interviewed all kinds of people. There were 400,000 people who made this mission successful. The book is Rocket Men, the epic story of the first man on the moon. Craig Nelson will be with us the second hour. And we are welcoming phone calls for Julie this hour, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, for you to join our conversation for all things political. And let's go to more phone calls. Scott from Green Bay is next. Hi, Scott.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm curious as to if the stimulus process is impeding, is causing a problem for healthcare. And let me put it this way. I don't think the stimulus, we can wait a year, it's not going to help. If you look at the $787 billion, if you just look at where it's being spent, I mean, it's all broken down. Anybody with even a little bit of common sense, economic knowledge, look at it and go, that's not going to stimulate anything. Barack Obama said, I'm going to go through it line by line. There's not going to be any wasteful spending. And then when it got passed, he tried to say, well, there's always some things that get thrown in there. There's a lot of things getting thrown in that were thrown in there. And from my perspective, I'm looking at going, okay, the stimulus, this big first proposal that you put forth is not going to work. What makes me think that taking something as massive as healthcare in your proposal is going to work? I'm skeptical because of what I would call a track record. Taking a look at your first big project, that isn't seeming to work real well by your own standards, but I'm supposed to trust you on something even larger, which would be healthcare. I guess that's how I'm looking at it. I think a lot of people are looking at it that way.
Well, yeah, I think you're exactly right, and I think that's what we're seeing in the polls, especially among independents who were for stimulus spending when Obama proposed it, and now polls show that they absolutely want to stop it. They want to stop all the government spending, and they're worried about it. So I think that you're giving voice to a real sort of line of anxiety, an emerging line of anxiety that we see in polls and public opinion polls, and not just one poll, but across the spectrum of polls, and it's a trend. You know, you can dismiss one poll or that poll and say, oh, well, it's a blip or it's biased, but when all the polls are in the same direction saying the same thing, you know, you kind of sit up and take notice. And that's why we're seeing Obama respond this week. Really, really strong. He came out strong last week, this week, probably next week, too.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to relieve those kinds of concerns expressed by Scott, saying, give the stimulus time and give me a shot on health care.
Thanks, Scott, very much for the call. Mike is next from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Hi. To quote you, roll out the money. Is it not true that if you roll out the money, you roll out inflation? And if you do that, isn't it true that senior citizens, elderly, who have fixed reduced incomes and probably are living off of their savings, which are receiving like almost negative interest right now, are going to be very, very hurt? So the idea of rolling out the money, would I think, is also anxiety-provoking. Do you think so?
Yes, and I do, and that's one of the big concerns, especially related to the deficit, and that's something that the Obama administration is watching very carefully because they want that to happen. So, yeah, they're absolutely concerned about that, and I think that's we see that in the polls. There was some polling done recently about attitudes about the deficit because there was a political sense a few years ago, excuse me, that, you know, quote-unquote deficits don't matter. But it turns out they do, and voters are concerned about it, and because of the effect it has on inflation.
Mm-hmm. But the money is earmarked. It's there. It's happened. Mm-hmm. People voted on it. It's just a matter of getting it out now, right? It is going to happen.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, of course. You give them money, they're going to spend it eventually.
Right. I'm sorry, Mike, what?
That money is based on a printing press. It's pieces of paper with numbers on it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think that you can grow money on trees, do you think that that's possible to just print money and spend it and think that you're doing something okay?
Oh, well, it's not me. It's not me doing it. It's the government doing it. But this was, I don't think that they're printing new money. I think this was money that they had that they're spending on this.
You're not in the business of printing money, I assume.
No, no, nor growing it on trees, but I'm willing. If anyone has some seeds for that tree. Yeah.
Thanks very much, Mike, for the call. Let's go to Tom from Richland Center. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi.
The thing that keeps getting lost in the discussion of healthcare is that we pay way too much now for what we get, and we have lousy outcomes compared to the industrial world, where true healthcare reform would save money. It's money in people's pockets that would be spent for stimulus spending without deficit spending. We wouldn't be borrowing it. It'd be money that I already get, but I have to pay for healthcare. And there's plans around the world that work very well, a whole variety of them, that spend half as much money as we do per person, and they cover everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We had one in Wisconsin called Healthy Wisconsin, would have been a great plan, and it got shot down. People ran away from it, but that's the future.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think what you're talking about is a single-payer system,
mm-hmm.
and Obama has talked about that a little bit, and he talked about it recently, why he doesn't want to go that route with, like, a strictly government-run system, because he feels like the healthcare industry is 6% of our economy, and he wants to build on that rather than dismantle it and start over with a government-run system. He feels like that would be too devastating to the U.S. economy, and so he doesn't want to do that. Because a lot of people wanted to see him go that route, or at least consider it, but he ruled it out.
Yeah. Tom has a point. It is amazing to me, Julie, how many programs I've done on healthcare reform that go back 20 years ago, 25 years ago. We've talked about this for so long, and I still don't understand why it is so hard in America to make some changes that everybody would agree. When you look at the number of people uninsured, everybody would say, this is way too many people who are uninsured.
It's true. And another thing, a common refrain here in Washington is, you know, especially from Democrats, is if you like your health care, you can keep it.
Right.
Well, I don't really know anybody who likes their health care.
I guess
some people like their doctor, but I don't know anyone who thinks they're getting a great deal. So, you know, it's kind of an odd construct.
Right. Yeah, it is. Do you have any thoughts about why it's so hard for us to make incremental changes to our system?
Well, incremental is the way to go, especially here in Washington, where, you know, you don't see much revolutionary change. You see it changed in increments, but there are just so many competing interests, because healthcare in this country is a profit center. It is a profit-driven business, and that is at odds sometimes with the public interest, and then stuck in the middle are politicians who are trying to balance those interests. And you might say, well, they represent the people. Well, that's just not the world we live in. You know, they also represent people who give them money. And so there's the rub.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call. Let us go next to Jed from Spring Valley. Hi, Jed.
Hi. This is actually Ken.
Oh, this is Ken.
Ken from Spring Valley.
Well, hi, Ken.
Yes. And I'm going to just change gears a little bit, if you don't mind. But I guess I would like to know if your guest thinks that cap and trade will pass. And if it does, what will be the true cost? When are we going to start getting educated about as to what this is going to do to our economy? And does anybody believe that it will truly make us energy independent? Thank you very much. I'll take my
Thanks.
Interesting.
Ken.
Well, cap and trade has been put on the legislative back burner, which is a very bad sign for Obama. But it was going the route of becoming so compromised that it was becoming less effective, and it was resembling less what he had initially tried to do. It's still his priority. He still talks about it a lot, but Congress does not have the will to take that up at the same time as health care, and so they decided to put health care on the front burner and just kind of wait and see on cap and trade, which makes its fortunes for passing much shakier, because once they delay something, well, I may get around to it eventually, you know, because we think, you know, oh, it's only July and we have time. But then when you think of the congressional calendar, they take a lot of time off work so to do other stuff. So they're not going to be around for very many more months to get it done this year.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be surprised. But again, I never count them out on stuff. But the way it's trending, I would definitely be surprised.
What is their schedule? They have a good deal of August off, right?
Yeah, August. And then they, you know, they come
October.
Back and then they a little bit, and then they're off again Thanksgiving and Christmas. And, you know, and then next thing you know, the year's over. So they, you know, a few months in the fall, and they wrap it up.
Isn't life like that? Next thing you know,
mm-hmm.
the year's
it's
over.
New Year's.
I know, Julie, but it's still summer now.
Mm-hmm, and we're another year older.
Oh, no. And the moonwalk was 40 years ago. Oh, my. It happens in a hurry. Our number is 800-486-8655. And we're talking all things political this hour, as we always do on Monday. And one of our favorite guests is here, Julie Mason, White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner, and before that worked for the Houston Chronicle in the same capacity. We go next to Catherine from Reedsburg. Hi, Catherine.
Hello. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
I'm fine. I was listening earlier to several of the issues that were being discussed, and I will try to stay focused. There's several things that I noticed. One, I'm a registered nurse, but that's just one piece of information there. But I lived overseas, too, for a while, and what I noticed is that healthcare costs a lot less than it costs here. For example, I could get a CAT scan for one-third to one-fourth the price that I would pay over here in the United States.
Wow.
It's almost as if, at that time, and I compared it to the price in the United States, and, you know, I could go for an appointment for maybe $25 or $35 with an orthopedic doctor. And that was just out of pocket, but of course I had insurance. The other thing is I've noticed, you know, they talk a lot about a nursing shortage. I'm a registered nurse. I became a nurse in 1990. I had to stop working or stop my career because I have a child with a disability. And after a while, I kept getting so many calls from the schools to take care of issues that I couldn't really carry on a job. But I think it's misunderstood that there is a shortage, because if you look at most of the nursing lists, registered lists or rosters showing how many registered nurses there are, there's a lot of them that are inactive. As a matter of fact, I wish I could pull one up right now, but I saw one roster from a state that showed that, and I was counting them, you know, just one page, and it looked like 60% of the people on that one page, which was, I think, a list of maybe 70 nurses, were inactive. And, you know, they had, you know, recent or current, you know, they'd entered the nursing field currently, because I would look at the dates that they were first, they first became registered nurses. So I think that's misunderstood. I mean, there isn't really, I don't want to say there is not a shortage. I think that there's just a lot of nurses that have gone into the nursing practice and have dropped out. And I think nurses are in kind of an odd situation, because we have the doctor who's the primary money, you know, the person who brings money to the hospital, you know, and that's very important for hospitals, of course. And then you have the patient, and we're kind of in between them, and somehow, I don't know if it's the management or something, we're sometimes, our needs are squeezed out, because there's a great demand on us, which I love the field and I like what I do. It's just that sometimes, you know, many of us have other issues that we have to take care of. And, for example, I remember an opportunity for my nursing manager to hire four more nurses, and there were going to be times where one of them was going to have to leave. But at least she would have three more nurses there than she had before, but she didn't hire them because she wasn't sure that they would be able to be there all the time. You know, I'd rather have four more nurses, knowing that maybe one has to leave unexpectedly, than not hire them at all. So, I mean, I'm looking to get back in, and I have found that there is one reentry program in one of the states where the hospital actually trains you and asks you to stay a year. So they make a commitment to you as well. So, anyway. Go ahead.
No, I'm wondering why there are so many nurses who are inactive right now. What's the reason for that?
Well, you know, I saw that, for example, in my experience, one time something happened, and I'll say, yeah, I'm just going to explain my experience. It's unfortunate that I have to bring my own experience, but I really want to make sure that it's an observation that's real, that's true. But one time I was working in a clinic, in a unit where a pharmacy person came in, brought in a hepatitis B vaccine, and placed it on top of the refrigerator and left. And I was the person in charge that day, and I was taking care of 12 patients, and I did not notice. So I was reprimanded for it. And luckily, I had a good nurse manager that said, wait a minute, you know, if this nurse didn't notice, then maybe we need to rewrite the protocols. And she was ahead of her time, because she saw that nurses can't be everything to everyone. Mm-hmm. We're female. We tend to think we can. And what the protocol changed to is that make sure that the pharmacy person that comes in makes contact with the person who's in charge in that unit.
Right.
Because just because they walk into a room and the nurse is there doesn't mean they notice. But it's simple things like that. But I got reprimanded, and I had to work really hard to make sure that my manager covered me. And I said, look, this is what happened. There's no way that, and I had to fight for myself. But then we had a doctor who messed up a circumcision pretty badly.
Ooh.
And she went in there and took care of him and made sure he was retrained. This is a pediatrician that was there for maybe, 10 years. Who had 7 years of experience as a pediatrician. And they worked with him till he got it right.
Wow. Julie, take whatever part you want.
Well, that's really interesting about the extra nurses who are kind of lingering around. Because, you do hear about the nursing shortage. But, nursing looks hard. If they drop down of nursing, I don't know. And it's not very well paid, is it?
Love it. But, we tend to be martyrs. And it's unfortunate, coming to the field because you want to care about people. It doesn't mean you want to bleed to death and do your job. You want to, of course you want a job. And you have to have managers that can say, wait a minute,
sure.
What are we doing here? Why are we reprimanding? Why are we making the nurse the fall guy for everything that happens?
Yeah, nurses work very hard. They're so crucial when you're in healthcare. They're just real crucial.
Well, I hope you get back into it.
Yeah. What about her point, which is an interesting, it's back to this healthcare thing, but I guess it's all healthcare all the time these days. This point of people going elsewhere, getting an experience of healthcare elsewhere, and finding out that the cost is so much less.
You would
think at a time when we're worried about money, when people are unemployed, where businesses are having problems, that one of our goals would definitely be to lower the cost of healthcare.
Right. That's certainly one of the president's objectives. But again, it goes back to our healthcare system in this country is mostly profit-driven.
Right.
They've got to make money. And when you talk about people going to Mexico or to other countries and the cost being so much lower, well, here in the States, they would argue that the quality is not as good and the wait times are longer and it's more of like a clinic and shuffling you through and you lose that, what Americans like, having a relationship with their doctor, getting a second opinion, things like that. Like those aspects of healthcare are lost. I don't know if this is true or not, but this is how the debate is being framed here because you do hear a lot in this debate about people who, lived in other countries and found healthcare easier and cheaper and much more manageable.
Yeah. Let's totally switch the subject for a moment before we pause and go back to phone calls. Is this president running a risk of getting bogged down in Afghanistan, Julie?
Man, Afghanistan is tough, isn't it? And so is Iraq, everything. And
right.
Pakistan, Afghanistan is now becoming, much like this economy, it's becoming Obama's war. He committed more troops to it, and we haven't really seen progress. But the thing is, they've also shifted tactics there, and it's much more of an intelligence-driven strategy. Less warfare, more sort of outreach and intelligence. And so we'll have to wait and see if that shows some results.
More phone calls for Julie in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. Julie Mason, White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner. Before that was with the Houston Chronicle. And it's all things political here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, 40 years ago today at 3:17 in the afternoon, the Eagle landed, the module touched down on the moon, and several hours later, Neil Armstrong took the first steps on the moon. We'll talk about that massive effort, which President John Kennedy said would be a goal to land somebody and bring them safely back from the moon. He said this in 1961, and by 1969, someone left a marker for him on his gravesite or a note saying that the mission indeed was accomplished. We'll talk about the 400,000 people who accomplished this mission, what it meant, all kinds of interesting facts, what happens to the body when it goes to the moon and how long it takes to recover, and what about the moon rocks and what do we learn from that experience and should we do it again? Our guest has written a fabulous book, Rocket Men, The Epic Story of the First Man on the Moon. Craig Nelson will be with us, hour number two. All right, let's go to Wayne next from Holman. Hi, Wayne.
Hey, good morning.
Hi, Wayne.
Hey, Julie, it's pleasant. It's fun to listen to you. You're a very open-minded and even-handed individual.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
One of my concerns, as I mentioned to the screener, was one of President Barack Obama's proposals in his health care plan is to mandate that all health insurers, and it will be in the national health care plan if passed, provide for coverage of abortion on demand. In other words, it has to be part of the coverage of that health insurer. And also there will be penalties to physicians, OBGYN and anesthesiologists, nursing staffs, who refuse to participate in an abortion. I find that to be incredibly mean-spirited. And you may disagree with me, but I have a first cousin who was an OBGYN physician at a local hospital, St. Francis Mayo. It's a Catholic institution. We're Roman Catholic, and he would not provide an abortion under any circumstances. Now, that's his position as a Roman Catholic, and Lutherans and Jewish may have the same philosophy. But he said that he would lose his license if this becomes part of Barack Obama's health care initiatives. And I just find that appalling, Julie, and I'm just wondering, I'll take my answer off the air, if you agree that it there should be a conscience clause in something like this or not. And Kathleen, go Brewers. Take care, kiddo.
Go Brewers, Wayne. Thanks. Okay, thanks for the call.
Well, abortion has come up as part of this health care debate because there are some Democrats in Congress who would like to fund abortion through the public health care component of the health care reform bill. And there's also some question about whether private insurers would also get some money for paying for abortion. But I'm not aware of any insistence or force or requirement that this happen. It's all very in the discussion stage. It's in the form of sort of amendments. It's not really something that the Obama administration wants to push through. Mostly they don't want to fight over this. And they're not ruling it out, but they're not ruling it in. They really want it to go away. So I can't see that it would really be as the caller described part of the bill, because in the White House they want to minimize gigantic battles, and you put abortion in a health care reform bill, you've got a battle on your hands.
Mm-hmm. You sure do. Scott from Wisconsin Dells is next. Hi, Scott.
Hi, good morning to you both. My question, Julie, involves the Blue Dog Democrats, and particularly in the Senate, where they do have to represent an entire state.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that we're in a very short cycle anymore of dominance by any one party. And wouldn't it make sense that the Blue Dogs would be really eager, even if they didn't like some parts of this president's agenda, to get things passed? Because if the Republicans do come roaring back on a failed Obama presidency, aren't these Blue Dogs going to be the, in fact, most vulnerable to being? I'm thinking about people like Nelson from Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't these be the people who would have the most to gain by getting something substantially passed? And I'm thinking particularly of health care, but you know, in all arenas that they are the vulnerable parties here. Why don't they see that?
Well, they are vulnerable, and they don't want to see something pass that's going to be incredibly expensive and that people aren't going to like. And I mean, that's true of all members of Congress. You know, they have a political interest in this, but the Blue Dogs, they're really causing a lot of problems for Obama right now. They're the first ones to balk at this. They don't like the spending. They don't, you know, they were not happy with the way the stimulus is going, and they're willing to block health care if it looks like it is going to affect the deficit or there's going to be some taxes involved. They're really, really holding his feet to the fire on how to pay for it, because that's their big issue. That's their really big issue is the money. And they are vulnerable. That's why they want to make extra sure that whatever gets passed is to their liking and conforms with their political values.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Scott, unless you had something else.
Does that answer your question, Scott?
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks. Thanks for your call. Mark from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi there. I'm curious if we can broaden this out to the international scope for a second. We're running a deficit here in America, but our accumulated deficit is the largest it's ever been, and it keeps growing, growing, growing. And I've heard twice now China float the notion that there ought to be an international currency instead of the world using the U.S. dollar. I'm curious if we're really hugely in debt. I can't get my arms around how big that number is, but I've heard that China owns up to 60% of our treasury bills already. I'm wondering if we're not in a little bigger trouble than we care to admit, and why we're spending so much time, you know, arguing about everything if we really are, in fact, in this much trouble. So I'm kind of curious your reaction to the, you know, my notions and what you know.
An international currency? Yeah, I don't see that happening. I don't see it. I think that's kind of an alarmist sort of thing. I don't see it heading in that direction. And yeah, the deficit is bad. It's really bad. But if this economy starts rebounding and there starts to be some growth and employment picks up, if then, you know, we could get back to surpluses. Remember, it wasn't even that long ago. So they keep telling us these things are cyclical. I'm not an economist, but I don't know. The government is still running.
Yeah. I guess there are unforeseen consequences, and you'd have to be an economist to really know the depth of this, or perhaps not. Other people know the depth of it, too. But for China to own 60% of the treasury bills is an astounding number, really. I mean, it makes China be this economic powerhouse, which it is.
Right. I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, he says that's true. I don't know.
Yeah.
I've heard the number floated a few times, but I can't say.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I couldn't say either.
I'm trying to get my arms around all this myself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then the other question I had is this for-profit notion. I know our system is for-profit this and for-profit that, and I know that in Europe their health system isn't for-profit, and I know the cost is lower. I wonder if anybody would dare make the equation that we're allowing profiteers to make our system less efficient.
Yes, that's, I hear that all the time. But, you know, and then the other side would say that we have to let capitalism do its job and let the marketplace sort it out and let competition rule the day. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's definitely part of the debate here, that this sort of runaway grab for profits has unduly diluted the quality of our health care.
Yeah.
Driven the prices up.
Thanks so much for your call, Mark. We go to Catherine next from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Catherine.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have so many comments, but I hate to take you back to healthcare, but here we are. The previous caller hit it on the head. I'm actually British, and I had the normal British healthcare, which was fine, until I married my husband, an American. How did it change? When I was living in Britain and I had his insurance, I was able to go private. Was there a difference when I went private from the health care I got when I was just an ordinary citizen going to the state system that was free? No, there really wasn't.
Interesting.
The only difference that I could see was that I paid a little more money and I went to doctors who had chosen to operate on the private side. And they made a little bit more money than the rest of the doctors. But to get back to the health care, my comment is this. This is a war on the poor and the underinsured and the people who fall ill and whose insurance cancel them. And if we were sustaining these kinds of injuries in a real war, the country would be in revolution. We would be demonstrating. It would be like Vietnam all over again. We would be saying, end it. Give us health care. Health care can never be for profit. If it's 6% of our GDP or whatever, it is never going to pull us into the black again, because these people are greedy and it just doesn't work for profit. Mm. That's not. You have to take the management, the business end out of medical.
And Catherine, before Julie responds, can you tell me why there is a private plan? What does that do? Why did you go that route?
Oh, I wanted to have some dental work done, and my husband had, you know, I was covered under his dental plan, and I needed to have, I would have had to, it was just a little bit cheaper because I was of a certain age, and in order to get a crown done, I couldn't get it done free, completely free, and so I would have had to pay. And with his health care, they paid. And they actually paid my doctor, he told me, they paid him more than he would have charged me under the private plan.
Oh, my gosh.
This is what the person said about CAT scans and various other procedures. I take it that nurse was using her private insurance, her American insurance, when she was overseas, because normally things like that don't really cost.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a different philosophy, isn't it, Julie?
Mm-hmm. It certainly is. I don't know how you take the profit out of the healthcare in this country. I mean, and plus, it's such a big employment center. It's kind of like, you know, you can't put the genie back in that bottle, to coin a phrase, right, if you will. But I thought the caller's point was really interesting about seeing no change in the quality of care between a government-run system and the private system.
Yeah, very interesting. Catherine, I'm glad you were listening. Thanks for the call. We got 30 seconds left. What are you doing this week, Julie?
Well, we're going to see Obama every single day talking about health care. And like I said, you know, he came back from that overseas trip roaring his head off about health care, and it's just going to be the same all week. Mm-hmm. Very aggressive.
So you'll be covering health care.
Oh, yeah. And we got a press conference on Wednesday night.
That's right. And I'm amazed almost all of our calls were on health care as
mm-hmm.
well.
Yeah. It affects everybody.
Yeah,
it does.
It sure does. Mm-hmm. Well, Julie, you're one of our favorite guests at All Things Political. Thank you so much
you
for
so
being
much,
with
Kathleen.
Us. Thanks, Julie. Julie, obviously in the newsroom there, you could hear people busy at work. Julie Mason, White House correspondent for the Washington Examiner. Julie has also worked for... I almost fell off my chair here. Also worked for the Houston Chronicle. All right, that's it for All Things Political, which you hear regularly Monday at 9 here on the Ideas Network. We are going to continue our Monday conversation and talk about what happened 40 years ago today. Those of you who were alive, I'm sure we'll have a lot of thoughts about what you saw and what did we learn from it. I don't think that they had a good enough PR agency to let us know what we learned when we got those rocks and what the trip taught us and how we advanced scientifically. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour and to Rachel Biblow for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. News coming up, and we'll return on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.